Hello and welcome to the Jean Monnet podcast for citizens' rights. I'm Romane Liber and this is a series of conversations with guest speakers or project team members.
Today, we are going to talk about the panel EU Integration and Citizens' Rights, a New Avenue to EU Legitimacy, which was a panel at the USS conference that took place in Belfast last September. The panel seeks to initiate a social legal discussion on the question of whether and in how far EU derived rights are contributing to the EU's legitimacy. It comprises of four contributions. Dr. Anna Nemskova and Dr. Alizini Loxa presented a paper written in contribution with Professor Xavier Grousseau entitled Integration Through Rights, an Impossible Status Quo. Professor Sonia Moreno-Fouadi presented a paper entitled European Rights for Non-EU Citizens, Integration Through Rights before the ECJ and the ECHR. Dr. Luigi Leonardo presented Integration Through Rights in EU External Affairs, a Realistic Possibility. And finally, I was a happy speaker of a paper co-written with Professor Dagmar Schick based on the concept paper of our center. The paper is entitled Integration Through Rights and EU Legitimacy. We are lucky to have here today Dr. Alizini Loxa and Professor Dagmar Schick to discuss their papers. As for Professor Moreno-Fouadi and Dr. Leonardo, while they could not join us today, let me tell you a little bit about them and their contribution. Professor Moreno-Fouadi is a professor at Oxford Brookes University. Her paper aimed to analyze the process of European integration within the wider European human rights system, adopting the integration through rights lens. Through an analysis of the standard of protection of third country nationals under EU law and compared to the European Convention of Human Rights regime, a paper explored the role that the Court of Justice of the EU and the European Court of Human Rights play in the process of integration. As for Dr. Leonardo, he's a lecturer at UCC and will be starting next month the principal investigator of the Jean Monnet. His paper aims at exploring the role of legal mobilization in shaping EU foreign policy with a focus on the uses of EU law in third countries. The discussion focuses on the factors that enable or inhibit legal mobilization, as well as on the desirability of the strategies for the achievement of diverse goals. But now let's come back to our guests. Professor Dagmar Schick is a professor of EU law at UCC since 2020, and starting the 1st of November, she will be full professor of EU law at University College Dublin. Her principal research interest is in EU law and its social economic impact in and beyond the EU. Dr. Alizini Loxa is a researcher at Lund University, a research focus on EU law, human rights and migration. So let me thank you for coming today. It's really a pleasure receiving you. So Dr. Alizini Loxa, you are representing here today all of your co-contributors as well, so Dr. Anna Zembrowska and Professor Xavier Grousseau. So your paper discusses the relationship between rights, European integration and the legal framework of the European Union. So can you maybe tell me, has rights, resilience and flexibility been affected by the various crises and challenges experienced by the EU since 2018? So the rule of law crisis, COVID-19, the economic recession, and are there notable changes in the court's approach?
Hello, Romain, and thank you for the introduction and for the questions. I will first give a background of the paper that Anna Zemskova and Xavier Grousseau co-authored on the concept of integration through rights and the resilience of rights that they talked about, and then I will discuss how we see shifts after the polycrisis experienced at the EU level from the time the paper was written, which we presented also at Belfast. Essentially, in 2018, Xavier and Anna discussed how the wording and spirit of Article 1-2 of the Treaty of the European Union and the concept of unity and diversity and ever closer union can be related and explained through the position of rights in EU integration. And they all talked about how rights have been resilient in the process of European integration through sometimes being like seen as economic freedom, sometimes connected with rule of law, and then after the Charter as fundamental rights. And essentially, they argued that we see the effectiveness of EU law be yielding sometimes to the discretion of member states to protect fundamental rights. And essentially, this is how they related rights to the unity and diversity in EU law. Essentially, after this this paper was written in 2018, the EU has experienced a set of very diverse challenges. After the economic crisis, the rule of law crisis, we have, as you said, the COVID pandemic, and then slowly we are experiencing an environmental challenges as well, with many people talking about climate crisis. What we see as main changes, and what we want to go into more in depth, is how the appearance of rights has in some respects yielded to a discourse about European values, and how European values come into play both in relation to the rule of law crisis, but also in a sort of like operational discourse of the EU that is protecting a broader space of democracy rights and democracy and rights as European values. At the same time, we do see that rights have been very much resistant, both in relation to COVID and more specifically as they appeared in the European Pillar of Social Rights and all the funding initiatives after the COVID pandemic. I think that the main point that we're trying to put forward in this paper that revisits the original contribution of Xavier and Anna is that perhaps it's better to talk about resistance of rights at this stage, as fundamental rights changing their appearance and being leaning more to the discourse of values. I think that is the broader frame. And we can, of course, discuss more specific elements if you want. Yes.
Yes, of course. Can you maybe tell me, you know, how does that has impacted in any way the court's approach? Because you mentioned a lot the courts in your paper as well.
Yes, I think there are different things in the sense that in the internal market field, for example, in the citizenship case law, there have been... Like for many years after the economic crisis, we see that rights are fundamental rights of EU citizens are less and less. They appear less and less in the argumentation of the court. Slowly, in the past 1 or 2 years, there is a return of rights, but mostly when it comes to fundamental rights to family life. So rights are relevant in family reunification cases, but not as relevant in as residence rights or social rights of EU citizens. And then also in the case law of the Court on Judicial Independence and the Rule of Law Crisis in Poland and Hungary, that is where we see a lot of values discussion. And then the final thing which I think is of interest in this concept of resistance of rights and crisis is that the court is continuing to use the charter, but it does use the charter in cases that are a lot less contentious, I would say. Like the court is insisting on using the charter, for example, in the case law relating to regular migration from third countries, and it's consistently invoked therein, while at the same time the scope of the charter application is restricted in some cases related to labor rights. So the picture is mixed. That would be the point. And this is a mixed picture that we hope we can delve in more and develop in the paper. So then the authors of this podcast can actually have a text they can reflect on. Yes.
Okay, well, thank you, Alizini. Thank you for this very interesting discussion on your paper. Professor Damrashik, now can you maybe tell us a little bit about your paper and how do current challenges for the EU relate to rights?
Yeah, that is a really good question. It picks up where Alizini has stopped, if I may. So today we are on day 10 after another war in the world started. And it's, of course, not a war on European soil other than the Ukraine war, but it's still very important. And it's also important to Europe, related to European history. It's Hamas attack on Israel and Israel's back attack on Gaza. And together with the Ukrainian war, which is now like 18 months in existence, I think, we have a situation where research in the EU and research in EU law is very much dominated by external relations policy. So in differentiated integration, the values, it's all the rage. There's a new policy paper on which the European Law Journal, by the way, offers a special issue by the French and German research group or policy group, and it outlines a future for the European Union where you have differentiated integration integrated in the EU. And what I find interesting is whenever they talk about law, there's very little room for law, and the room for law is only in the rule of law. So are the institutions still in place? And there's no space for considering what is it actually the integrative power of law? And we could wonder as legal researchers, do we still need that? And we say in our paper together, Roman, that we do still need it, but we need a different perspective. So I personally am still convinced that the strength of European Union law is that it goes beyond mere international law, although that's an arrogant phrasing which I copy from the Court of Justice. And the strength there is that citizens can rely on EU-derived rights directly before national courts. And your perspective, Alexini, has more been from the national rights protection towards the EU. And our perspective is the other way around. Can the EU and its law be used to create rights, and are those rights effective? And in our whole project, we not only look at the EU itself, but also at the neighboring country and globally. And I think this rights creation can be a new paradigm for discussing EU law, maybe from innovative perspectives, but I'm more interested in the practicalist perspectives. Can citizens actually relate to those rights? Do they know that they have them? Do they use them? And if they try to use them, is it easy to use them? And there we get a lot of differentiated integration, because it depends very much on the national system, how the rights can be used. So I think that's enough for the first input, right? I didn't say enough about our paper, is that right? So what our paper does with these big questions, it doesn't start at the Israel war, because it was written before, yeah, but it starts at the big questions and looking, okay, we need a new notion of rights, and our notion of rights needs to capture what the EU can do within their competences. And there's a lot of rights which are created in areas which you, Alexini, refer to as a little bit less controversial: working time, social rights. I would say these are far from less controversial. Thinking about one of the big conflicts between the European Court of Justice and national courts, the Danish Supreme Court hung up on social rights and on the right not to be discriminated on ground of age when ending your employment. And that was their issue, their casus belli with the Court of Justice, saying we don't follow your age discrimination law because it disturbs the social compromises found in the Danish legal order. So I think the social rights, also consumer rights, but also digital rights, the Artificial Intelligence Act in the making, and also the data protection rights, are really, really close to the reality of citizens. And that also means they are controversial because they're different. So that's the notion of rights doesn't only comprise human rights, but also the practically used rights. And that then leads our paper to the question, how can rights actually install interactions between citizens? That's quite a jump, because the traditional, especially English language definition of rights, its rights are claims against society. Rights are where you defend your personal space against society. And that's, of course, an anathema to interaction. And so we are saying, well, actually, that's not all rights do, especially if you look at EU-derived rights, which are often in areas as data protection, consumer rights, free market rights, social rights. They are in areas where citizens interact and shape those areas. And even if you look at the rights which are presumably levitated against the state, refugee rights were mentioned earlier, these also create interaction, because it's a refugee which claims a right against the receiving state. And then the citizens in the state, very often in populist discourse, say, well, that infringes around our rights. The rights are communication, even if it's not always positive. So that's what we're trying to do with the paper.
Thank you, Dagmar. And it allowed me to come back a little bit to the research focus of the Jean Monnet. You already explained the whole idea of rights, but maybe can you explain a little bit of how it links to generating legitimacy for the EU, how citizens using them right will generate legitimacy for the European Union?
Well, there's a lot of discourse about legitimacy and legitimation of the EU. Legitimacy, looking at the legitimacy of the EU's rule, law, and everything they do, which is the procedural side of legitimacy, how the rights are produced, how laws are produced. Is it a democracy or is it a defection? Legitimization has a different context. It relates to substantive legitimacy. What do people get out of the EU? And that's where our rights discourse comes in. It comes in both areas, but it has a focus on the perception of the EU, on the use of the EU, and if those EU-derived rights are in citizens' consciousness and can also actually shape European societies, then the EU itself will be more legitimated than if that's not the case. And there's also long discourse on rights, on the legitimacy, on creating democratically legitimate rule, and that's when rights are protected against intrusion. But we are focusing more on the activation of rights, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, thank you. And you, Alizini, do you have any opinion on the matter? Do you think that citizens can actually use EU derived right and that will contribute to the EU legitimacy?
I first want to say that I think it's commendable to look at the relation of like EU legitimacy through rights, because of course it's apart from the fact that this is a research focus of the center, there is some sort of like effort from the EU to constantly reinvent the wheel on how like it will be legitimized in the eyes of the citizens, and of course a big part of that is both the EU derived rights and how they change the everyday lives of EU citizens, and also how rights can be claimed in national fora and they can affect national disputes. So I think it's very important to focus on that. And then my contribution to that discussion, which perhaps is not the most optimist thing, is that based on the research that I did on the PhD, I think that sometimes problems with EU social legitimacy and the rights of citizens come when there exists a differentiation between the EU discourse on what the EU can offer its citizens and then what is the practical output of EU citizens and what rights they actually can enjoy, which of course can be dependent both on national implementation and how close the EU Commission follows whether specific EU-derived rights are implemented, but also, of course, it is a matter of communication from the epistemic communities to the citizens of what rights they can claim. Yes, so I think that's what I was thinking about that, and I think and I've been thinking about it a lot also in relation to social rights of citizens when they migrate between EU member states, where I think a big part of distrust from non-mobile EU citizens is that there is a very differentiated discourse at EU institutional level of on the rights that EU citizens can derive. And then we have at the same time a case law that is getting more and more restrictive on the entitlements of mobile EU citizens and their equal treatment, especially with respect to access to health services, for example. And of course, the differentiation in rights granted, like rights implemented, and the discourse is behind different populist discourses also in some member states.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for this very fascinating discussion. It was really a pleasure receiving you. Our podcast will take a little break. So for our listeners, we'll come back with our next event beginning of 2024. And in the meantime, we're preparing really good events, so stay tuned. We can already tell you that our next event will be held at the Equality and Human Rights Commission in Dublin and will relate to the EU as a promoter of anti-discrimination rights in its neighbourhood with a comparison of Northern Ireland and Ukraine. So the event will take place the 6th of February, so you can already put that in your calendars, and the call of paper is coming soon. So don't miss the opportunity to be part of one of our events. We are also planning another event that will take place at UCC and relate to the pandemic as litmus test for EU anti-discrimination law with regard to gender and ethnic inequalities. It will take place the 14th of March, so keep that date as well. And we have the call for papers that is already published. So please, we want to hear from you. Send your papers. And keep in touch with what we are doing by checking our website. Type UCC EU Integration Jean Monnet Center. You can also find us on LinkedIn. So see you in 2024.